Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories. I share some of my big epic fails that I've made along the way, all because I really believe the teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of the things I love to do as well is to interview experts. And so today I want to introduce you to one of those experts. His name is Dan Luer, and he is a true expert on, I would say, student-centered, creativity-driven social studies instruction. Dan is a public school teacher, author, and content creator. He started History for Humans to provide story-based history videos with full lesson plans so teachers can cut the lecture and engage with students more. For 11 years, Dan has been a social studies teacher in a Title I public high school, and in 2020, he was named the Hawaii History Teacher of the Year. He has traveled all across the United States, visiting teachers in every educational setting and environment, and he loves working with both students and teachers. I had the honor of interviewing him, and here we go. Here is the interview with Dan Luer. I hope that you enjoy it and you get as much out of this interview as I got out of it. It truly was a pleasure to get a chance to interview him. All right, we have with us here Dan Luer, who is from Hawaii. And I was just saying to him before we got started that I love the fact that we can kind of hear some of the sounds of where he's at in the background, which I think is really cool. Dan, you teach social studies, your background is social studies. You're going to be talking to us about this idea of what it means to teach social studies authentically and valuing that student voice and choice. I'm curious, what is your background? Tell me a little bit about how you got into it. Why social studies? Just a little bit about your story.
Yeah, sure. Hey, John, thanks for having me. Hello, everyone listening. Aloha. So right now, yeah, I do live on the Big Island of Hawaii in a small little town. I was telling John I'm off grid, so I live on a little 5-acre little farm. We have some oranges and coffee and chickens and sheep and stuff. But I grew up in New Jersey, right outside of New York City, and I moved out here for college, and then I've been out here in Hawaii pretty much my whole adult life. I've been a teacher for 12 years, and that's kind of, you know, who I am in my bones. I have a lot of pride in being a teacher. I kind of got started when I was in high school. I was kind of politically active, and my brother was, you know, like really active. He led organizations across Bergen County and protests and social movements and projects raising funds for the homeless and different causes. So that kind of sparked a little fire in me. And then I had a history teacher when I was in high school who is still a mentor of mine. We still talk a lot. And yeah, I always had like an interest in history kind of as a weapon, history as something that can empower you to understand politics more, to understand how to make change, to understand your place in the world and where the foundations that you're standing on. And I've been a teacher for 12 years in a small school here in Hawaii, Title I public school. A few years ago, about 5 years ago, I took a sabbatical. I was lucky enough to be granted a sabbatical. I drove all over the country collaborating with teachers and visiting schools, all different environments, public, private, charter, magnet, religious, you know, full autistic, full like fully self-contained students who are, you know, trying to stay out of the prison pipeline. And everything in between, it was great just seeing all different settings, seeing teachers just crushing it in all different ways, upping my game as a teacher, re-inspiring me, because that was after my 7th year where, you know, you kind of might get into it, just a groove, and it kind of reignited my passion for teaching. And yeah, so that's kind of some of my background. Lately, I have like I make educational videos and content for online, story-based history, which I think is a big way to make history authentic, and we can get into that later. But I make, it's called History for Humans. I make some educational content for teachers to use in the classroom.
Yeah, and I noticed too, you were the 2020 Hawaii Teacher of the Year. Can you tell me a little bit about that? What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was pretty exciting. So there's this organization called Gilder Lehrman, the Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History. I really implore English teachers, social studies teachers especially, but there's a lot of stuff for English teachers as well, to get involved in this organization. They have tons of free, amazing resources. And I got accepted. They have summer programs. They have lots of workshops all throughout the year. They have a whole program on how to teach, how to use Hamilton in the classroom. So full resources. There's great online collaboration with them. So I really implore anyone to check them out, Gilder Lehrman Institute. And when I was doing my sabbatical, the way I was trying to find teachers, I really went on their website and I was looking for people who won, you know, the State History Teacher of the Year or the National History Teacher of the Year. And I used that to help find a lot of teachers that I collaborated with. And then because I use a lot of their stuff, I'm not sure someone nominated me. This was the year when, it was 2020. So that was, a quarter of the year was interrupted by COVID. And so I was awarded. It felt a little weird, I'll be honest, to win like History Teacher of the Year for the state of Hawaii, because I've collaborated with teachers from across the state. And so, I'm kind of, it was humbling. And I'm like, I felt a little, insecure, like, oh, did I really deserve this? I know there's all these other amazing teachers out there, but yeah, it was pretty cool. And I appreciated it. And it made me think, okay, I better live up to this and keep striving to do my best for my students.
Yeah. One of the things that you said that I was struck with by what was, when you said, that history can be a weapon, that history has this inherent power to it. What do you say to people who are, teachers or community members, who feel like, history should just be sort of neutral, just teach the facts, just focus on, making sure people have a general understanding of what happened in the past. What's your response to that mindset?
Yeah, no, I totally support that mindset. There's a couple ways you can interpret that statement, that history is a weapon. It's similar to just saying knowledge is power, but more geared towards my discipline, because knowledge is power. It's just education is what you can use to, for improving your self-improvement as well as a societal change. So history, even teaching history totally neutrally, which I think is damn near impossible.
Yeah.
It can still be a weapon in the fact that you're learning about people who have created change. So when you study change agents, you understand what they went through, how they made change. You understand, the structures of our government and how citizens can participate. So you can totally be as, fair-minded. And I really encourage that. I think there are teachers on both sides of the spectrum that are teaching students what to think rather than how to think. Right.
I think like what you just said there, I think that distinction is something people miss sometimes, that, because I started out as a social studies teacher, and the notion of a singular neutral history is itself supporting a one distinct worldview, right? Versus what you brought up, which is fair-minded, is a really different approach. So I'm curious if you could speak to, what does it mean for a teacher to be fair-minded when handling some of the contentious topics that come up in social studies?
Yeah. So I'm just reminded, I posted on Instagram and my Facebook sometime last year, I believe, just an assignment that I was kind of excited about, where we were studying different totalitarian regimes from the 30s, Italy and Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. And then we were comparing how they built up their totalitarian regime with, you know, secret police, propaganda machines, rallies and whatnot, and how the current Chinese government has built up a totalitarian state, looking at their detention centers with the Uyghurs, their social currency system. And I thought it was just like, oh, this is a cool lesson where they're bridging, you know, applying history to a current situation and noticing comparisons and how totalitarian systems have evolved. And then somebody commented kind of snarky, was like, oh, wow. I can't remember his comment, but they're like, wow, you're not even trying to be neutral. And then I was like, well, should I be neutral when I'm teaching the Holocaust? Like, oh, let's look at both sides. How did the Nazis, like I want my students to, so to jump back, there are certain values that we want to imprint and impress on our students, values of human rights, human dignity, democratic values. And you can't, if you're just totally neutral, that's hard to do, because we want them to appreciate democracy and value other human beings of different races, nationalities, sexual orientations, and all that. So I think we need to, we're always taking, the question is, where do we draw the line? We want to imprint those values, but how do we make sure we're not just making them believe, if I'm a Democrat, all the things that I believe, or if I'm a Republican, how do I still, the broad scope of history, keep it neutral there? So I think, and then now this is the conversation that schools need to be having, because this is what really matters. And it's all over the media right now. And it's all, you know, politics is everywhere. History education is a flashpoint across America, especially with CRT, but not just that. And history teachers are feeling more pressure than ever, because there's so much interest in what exactly we're teaching, what are we assigning them, what are our what are we having kids discuss and learn. Sorry, can you hear the chicken going off in the background?
Yeah, great.
sorry. So, and because of that, and I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh yeah. So I was just saying, like, I think there's some silver lining to this, even though it's like some teachers are getting parents calling up the principal, showing up to school board meetings, grumbling about, oh, you're making my students read, you know, the autobiography of Malcolm X, and so you're trying to imprint these values on them, or you're only focusing on slavery and not on Jefferson's good sides or what have you. So there's a lot of history teachers' feet are to the flame more than ever. But if there's any silver lining, it's that history education is, we're seeing just how valuable history and civics education is, social studies education. A lot of times for history teachers, we're kind of on the back burner. You know, for a long time, it was just English and math, right? English scores, math scores. And now there's STEM. And so STEM gets all the, a lot of funding goes to STEM. I think we spend $45 every year on each individual student on STEM education, and 5 cents on civic education. So 45 for STEM, 5 cents for civics education. So we'll have bigger and bigger bombs, but no one to recommend that it might not be good to use them to drop them on our enemies. So I think because it's becoming in the spotlight, it might be our moment as history teachers to show the world and to show the country that, yeah, we need to invest in this. This is important. What we are teaching does have an impact on our students, and therefore make sure we have enough professional developments and trainings and good resources so that we can, do the best job we can with providing authentic history. And I can get into more specifics. That was kind of a bird's eye view of how I'm seeing things right now. But yeah, I don't know if you had any thoughts on anything there.
No, I can, I love what you shared. I want to focus a little bit now on this idea of authenticity and what it means mm-hmm. to teach history in a way that's authentic. And part of where that's coming from is the battle I had as a social studies teacher my first 5 years, and then I went from that to self-contained, was the community. There were, in my state where I lived, which is Arizona, there were some really bad laws about, you know, don't teach any, quote, anti-American history. And so we were obviously fighting back on that and just teaching the reality of history. And partly because I truly believe if you love your country, that includes having a critical eye, right? It doesn't mean just only focusing on the positives. In the same way that if you love a person, you don't ignore their flaws, you address them. That was the context. So social studies was contentious, right? I'm seeing some of the things happening right now. I mean, I got pushback back in the day with books like Night and Mouse and Fahrenheit 451. And those battles are happening. And so at a community level, it was like, well, social studies is important. The community's saying it, it's obviously contentious. If anything, we're getting a lesson firsthand on the need for civic participation, right? Because these laws are being passed at school boards and sometimes library boards and things like that. And in the meantime, so that was the community side. Students would come to me, though, at the beginning of the year, and their assumption about social studies is that it's boring and irrelevant. Right? So the community knows it's powerful. They know it's contentious. That's why they're trying to ban certain things. That's why they're trying to correct certain things. And in the meantime, students come in and their automatic assumption is boring and irrelevant. So what I'm curious about is why do you think that a community might believe something about social studies, but students coming into, say, in my case, middle school, would have internalized this idea that this particular subject is inherently boring and irrelevant? Where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, whoa. Yeah, that so breaks my heart. I really think as a teacher, I just made my whole guiding philosophy to go to war against that and to ensure that students are seeing the relevancy of it. So one of the first things I do week, you know, after we get to know your games, but like really within the first, I don't know, couple days, what I do is we have a big thing on why do we study history? Why is, if it's world history or American history, why? Right. And then I tell them, look, every civilization throughout all of time has spent great efforts and great resources in order to teach history. For most of human history, for most cultures, it was only to a certain select elite that got to learn the history. Mm-hmm. And today in America, you know, we spend millions of dollars on books and on teachers to teach it. So there must be some reason, unless all teachers are crazy, right? Maybe adults just want to find random places to spend their money. But I'm like, I don't think that's it. So let's figure out why. So I have them brainstorm, why do we study history? And they just like talk with their neighbors. And then we come up with some answers. And then what I do is I have six major reasons, and I'm going to wonder if I can remember all of them. And I post them around the room. And they do like a walkabout, right? I forget what other people might call that activity, where they're in small groups. Gallery walk. Exactly. Yeah, that's the activity. And they copy down the short reason. So it might say the classic quote, right? And that's what a lot of students know. Oh, if we don't study history, we're doomed to repeat it. So that's one of them, right? And then they have to talk about what that is and why that could be valuable to study history so that we don't repeat things. Like, we don't want to repeat slavery. We don't want to repeat more wars. Okay. And then there's other ones like it helps us be inspired to create change in the world when we study history. All right. So then they talk about that and they go to the next one. It builds empathy for people of different backgrounds. And they go around the room. And then they kind of rate, we have a little debate. Okay, go to the reason you think is most important to study history. And then so they go, they separate from their initial groups. And just this activity pays dividends throughout the year because a lot of the times when I end a test, I say, okay, so we just studied, you know, the Indian caste system. For what reason that we study history is this important? So we just studied, and they had to tell me. So rather than me saying, oh, we need to study the Indian caste system because of this reason, but from the ones I have on my walls, plus the ones they created, they can choose any. For every unit of the year, it's a short reflection. Sometimes it's a paragraph. Sometimes I turn it into a bigger, like, you know, short essay. Why is it important to study the Indian caste system, to study the progressive movement? And then the students have to, you know, it's kind of an open note thing. They can look through their stuff. Why? How can it be valuable to me as a teenager in Hawaii or a teenager in America? How can it help me in life? Right. And it's like, oh, this is going to make me make sure I don't want to discriminate against others just because they're born to a different family or born at a different economic level. Or this made me realize that, oh, the government can try to address problems that are in the community, like the progressive era. And then we go, you know, some students share, they get in small groups and share with each other's groups. And I always kind of hope that this made an impact on the students. And then I just had one of my students last year come up to me. She was a graduating senior. And she's like, you know, that activity we did at the beginning when you made us wonder about why we're studying history? She said, that totally changed how I approached history class for the entire 4 years. She goes, because of that activity, I looked forward to learning. And I was just like crying. I couldn't believe it. I'm like almost tearing up right now. She's like, even not in your class, because I was close with her, but she's like, even in my other classes, even if it was a boring teacher, I realized, wait, there's something I can get from this. So that's an activity I think all teachers could be doing. You could probably do it in your math and science classes too. Why do we study this? Okay, we just studied Newton's laws. How can this be relevant to us today? So that's one way I think it can be imparting them the relevance of it. Another thing I think, another activity that I like to do is something called like a legacies scavenger hunt. And this is a fun activity. You can get kids out of the classroom. They can do this for home around their communities or at their houses. Or you can do it like a little field trip around the school, like a scavenger hunt around the school. Or maybe you get permission slips. I sometimes just walk around, like we have a small downtown right outside of our school and, you know, playground and some shops and some churches and stuff. And we just call it like a legacy, progressive era legacy scavenger hunt, World War II legacy scavenger hunt, Columbian Exchange legacy scavenger hunt. And they have to take pictures of something they see that could be a legacy of what happened during the 1920s. So 1920s. Yeah. And then they're looking with a critical eye. And, you know, when we did the Columbian Exchange and globalization, some of the kids, they take pictures of, oh, here's a Catholic church right next to a Buddhist temple. That is that's mixing of cultures. That's globalization. And some go into, you know, the food store and there's, you know, the Asian seasonings right next to the Mexican tortilla, you know, like, so they're seeing the ethnic foods, the mixing of cultures. And, or some of them take pictures, like they take a selfie with a few of their friends and, you know, one's a Filipino and one's Marshallese and one's, you know, Hawaiian Portuguese. And then they're like, we're a legacy of the Columbian Exchange, this mixing of cultures. And then you can just do it just that, right? So it could just be a small little fun activity to that you're developing this critical eye for them to see how the past has impacted the present. Or you can turn it into a bigger one where they present, you know, they have to make an essay about it or a presentation about it. I've done both depending, but I really like doing it at the, you know, if you have 30 minutes at the end of a unit, walk around campus. What from the past do we, you know, if it was progressive era, oh, look at this little park that, or like this little like garden, maybe that's a legacy of how like Roosevelt was a steward of the environment. Or, this fire drill. This is like from the Triangle Factory fire, how they had to, you know, they had government reforms in that respect. And I think it's really powerful. It's interesting. And the kids are, you know, thinking critically and seeing history alive. You know, they're seeing the tip of the iceberg and imagining the story on how it went from the past to here now. So that's another way that I really like doing that.
Yeah, I feel like as a teacher, one of my main goals was, I kind of felt like history is a lot of things. It's fun and delightful and surprising and mysterious, and it's also tragic and it's emotional and it's all of these different things. But like one thing it's really not, unless you only go the most superficial route, the one thing it history never is boring. So, I mean, it was always like this goal of mine to say, I want to make sure, like you said, that it feels alive, that it feels real. If you think about going back to this idea of authenticity, what do you think are some of the components that make a social studies class, whether it's someone who teaches all subjects and social studies is just one of the many subjects, or if they're just a social studies teacher and that's, you know, solely what they teach, what are some components that you think make up that idea of authenticity?
Yeah, I think there's you want to make sure that you're imparting multiple perspectives and telling multiple stories in your class, right? Because how there's not just one story, for instance, of the American Revolution. The way it impacted the colonial elites was different than the merchant class, was different than the enslaved peoples, was different than women, right? So I think you want to make it authentic and to also make sure you're being fair and balanced and able to say, look, I am showing multiple perspectives on this event if there were parents who are getting feisty and looking over their kids' shoulder on what they're learning. And you want to make sure you are telling multiple perspectives because America isn't just one thing. Or if it's world history, you can do similar, right? How did this affect the different classes or the different groups who are involved? So make sure you're including multiple voices, right? For too long of time, minority voices were ignored in history. And I think we are doing a much better job of correcting for that now. Are we doing enough? I think that comes down to the teacher or the individual school district. And another way that is encouraging, because I think a lot more teachers are doing this now, is using primary sources. So primary sources is a way for students to dive into the past, to swim around in it on its own terms. There is one teacher, I didn't coin this term, but I think it's, you know, can excite your students. And, you know, just it's saying when you study primary sources, you're dancing with the dead. So, all right, guys, we're going to dance with the dead today, you know, and it's just like, oh, you know, just I think those little sayings can have, you know, a nice little impact in the classroom. So you dance with the dead, you get to see what was going on in their minds. If it's a journal, if it's a speech, if it's a photograph from the event or an illustration of the event. So I think the primary sources are a fantastic way to make sure that you're providing an authentic history. Now, same when you're giving primary sources, you also got to make sure you're showing a range of perspectives, right? And this can be hard for teachers, especially elementary teachers at social studies level or maybe even middle school, because a lot of primary sources are written in a language, even if it's English, right? Like reading Madison or Hamilton could seem like, what language is this, Latin? Just because the way they spoke in the 18th century, or, you know, if it was before that, John Locke or whatever, it can be daunting. So I think teachers in my department, we were like debating, like, is it wrong for us to modify these primary sources? Like, here's, you know, John Locke's treatise on government, like, but the kids, this is just like a Rubik's cube for the kids, you know? So you can either A, give them like shorter, you know, you can scaffold it and just break it up into a few short sentences and have them. I think it is important to have kids wrestle with challenging language because that will build those critical thinking skills. But that's something we've always, and I don't have an answer for it. I think, but you know, like, I don't know if you've seen those books where it has Shakespeare, but then it has Shakespeare, like modern Shakespeare, or sometimes they've had like hip hop Shakespeare, or like I've even seen, and I was kind of made me like not gag a little bit, but I was like, oh no, it was like Shakespeare with like through emojis and text messages. And I was like, oh God, that's the beauties in his language. And now you're texting Shakespeare, but it makes it relatable. Right. And if the main point of the lesson is to get kids to relate to it, to understand it, if you wanted to provide a short summary of what he's saying, and maybe you can make that optional, I think teachers should be empowered to do that. And make sure they're seeing some of the primary sources. And then you say, okay, and this is a little crutch if you need it, briefly summarized or broken down for you. So, but I know that can be hard. I know that's one of the daunting things about primary sources is, wow, this is really complex. You know, we give textbooks based on their grade level, based on reading levels. So primary sources, though, of course, are not like that. So I understand that's a challenge. And I think teachers can navigate that on their own. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to modify slightly, if so long as you're telling the students, this is a slightly modified version of the Declaration of Independence or the I Have a Dream speech or what have you. Because that's, I think, a really big thing for history classes to be authentic. And then a strategy I kind of like to do is this, because you need secondary sources too, which you could be the secondary source if you're lecturing or video clips or what have you. But I think after you've read a series of primary sources, the students now, okay, so explain how World War II affected African Americans. So they read a whole bunch of documents from African Americans or about African Americans during World War II. And then, so they've been able to interpret it themselves. They've been able to kind of dance with the dead. And now you say, all right, now guys, since you have your own interpretation, let's open up the textbook. And students normally hate that, but we're going to say, we're going to try to improve it. And I think this is, students is the only time I've actually seen them like kind of get a little bit excited for opening up the textbook. Yeah. And let's read what they say about African Americans during World War II. And they're reading it now with a much more critical eye. They're understanding more. And then I say, okay, either individually, I like small groups, add one paragraph. What did this textbook leave out that you were able to interpret based on the documents you had, right? So then they are like looking through, oh, they didn't bring up the race riots that happened in Tulsa. I guess that'd be World War One or after World War One, but let's add a section on that. I don't think he gave enough emphasis on this. So I think that's a really great strategy. So that way you're balancing primary and secondary sources and then getting students to develop those critical thinking skills along the way.
I love it. So I'm going to just end with one last thing. I know that you mentioned that you have resources that you've developed, YouTube videos, and I was just wondering if you'd be willing to share a little more about that just talk a little bit about what you have in terms of resources for people to connect to just from you as a content creator.
Yeah, and this can actually further add on to the authenticity bit. I think another thing that really makes history education relevant and authentic is using stories. Stories are how we make sense of the world. When we're driving home as adults at the end of the workday, we're telling the story of our day in a narrative form. We dream in narrative forms when our subconscious is trying to put together all the random things bouncing around in there. When lawyers are presenting a case, they're not just laying down facts like a lecture. They are building a story in jury trials. They're building a story that will convince the jury. There's a reason why all cultures start with creation stories, because if they started with creation lectures, they wouldn't last, 50 years. Your students, we need to up our lecture game. And I think the way we do that is with story lectures. So ground a lecture in a story. And it could be a personal story. And like maybe you're studying the Depression and you remembered how your grandma or grandpa lived through it, and how they, my grandparents, they said they never knew what food they were eating. It was all canned food. And there was they had to buy the discounted ones that never had the label on them, right? The paper label had all tore off. So my grandparents would always tell me, we opened, it was always mystery dinner because they were so poor. They opened up the canned food. They didn't know if it was going to be cranberries or, canned meat or green beans for dinner. It was mystery. So, or the classic story of the in a box, say, you know, your savings and not putting it in the bank. It could be a personal story, or it could be a story right from history on some Martin Luther, something about Martin Luther King and the March on Washington and what they did and how that went, rather than just saying, oh, the Voting Rights Act was this, the Civil Rights Act in 1964 was this, because that might cover the bases in the short term, but what's going to resonate with students is story. And so what I dealt with my resources on History for Humans, you can find that on YouTube, or I'm on TikTok and Instagram as well, my website, historyforhumans.com. I do story-based history. So I tell the story of women's suffrage through the night of terror and how women were tortured in prison and how that led to public outrage that led to the 19th Amendment, or the protest in the 1968 Olympics, the Black Power protest, to that as a way to thread the needle through the whole Black Power movement. And so I have resources. And so it's not just videos. So they're videos. And then there's resources that go with them. So you kind of have a full lesson plan for the video. Unlike if you're watching like Crash Course or any of the other histories, it's just kind of like, ooh, take notes on it maybe. Or so it has like a full lesson plan for you ready to go. And that I think, and my goal is to make it easier to teach complex history that's build skills in students, the relevancy in students, and makes your job as a teacher easier to just so you can explore history and not just be teaching like the person in the front of the classroom lecturing. So on my website, you can find a whole bunch of stuff. I have all U.S. history from post-Civil War to like the Civil Rights Movement, and now I'm building a early American history curriculum too.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, and thanks for just sharing a little bit about your story and the bigger idea of authenticity in history and the way that we teach it.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me, John. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And yeah, it was great talking with you.
So again, that was Dan Luer talking about the importance of student-centered, authentic, creativity-driven social studies. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoy this podcast, would you do me a favor and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever it is you get your podcast? Just leave a review. That would mean the world to me. And again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.